Hi, this is Brian Doyle with the International Sports Federation and Global Serve, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McKay.
And we're back. Youth Ministry Sherpas, episode number 8.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve Anderson.
And I'm Matthew McKay.
Hey, before we get started today, we just want to thank our good buddy, Kyle Brennan from Manassas, Virginia. Kyle was the first person ever to sponsor us at the K2 level as a podcast patron.
$10 a month. We are greatly appreciative of that support. He said we were better than Netflix.
Which is a total lie, but thanks, Kyle. We love you, and thanks for encouraging us with that support.
Appreciate the support.
You could do that as well, if you'd like, by going to our website, youthministrysherpas.com. There's a button on there at the bottom. It says support our podcast. If you click on that, you can support us for $1 a month, $5 a month, or whatever. And we would just be so grateful for that to help us keep this podcast going.
And it comes with perks.
It does.
So there's that.
Yeah. In fact, if you sign up for our email, you will be entered into the opportunity to win the $50 Sherpa prize pack.
Which is going to be absolutely amazing.
It's going to be great.
You definitely want to be in on that contest.
We don't know what's in it yet.
March 15th.
That's
to
right.
To sign up for our newsletter on our website to be entered into that contest.
Yeah.
Please do that.
Yeah, and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and just check out our website. We've got some good blogs up there. We've been trying to grow our blogging community and adding some new writers to the mix. So check us out, youthministrysherpas.com.
Some great voices on there, some good blogs that you could read and be encouraged by.
So speaking of encouragement, if you are doing youth ministry, you know how hard this is. And it just seems like it's getting harder and harder. I mean, I was just talking to some friends this morning about how difficult it seems like the culture's getting, you know, as youth workers, to be able to reach students and draw them into relationship with Christ in a world where it seems like increasing numbers of people don't really care.
Just don't care. They're not interested. And so this calling into student ministry that we have just becomes more and more difficult by the month, it seems, as the culture shifts.
And we've been doing this for years, but maybe you're young in youth ministry or pretty new to it, and even you are seeing the changes just in your short tenure of all the cultural implications for youth ministry and the things that are affecting us. So we want to encourage you. And we think this next conversation that we're about to introduce is going to do just that.
Yeah, we had a great privilege of interviewing Brock Morgan. Brock is an author. He is a speaker on the Youth Specialties team. He's written 4 books for the Youth Cartel. He wrote a book to students called The Amazing Next. He wrote a book to parents called Parents' Guide to Understanding Teenage Boys. And he's written 2 books targeted towards youth workers like ourselves. Youth Ministry in a Post-Christian World, and his most recent book.
Yeah, Youth Ministry 2027. So it's a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of challenge, and a good, intense look at what youth ministry is going to look like 10 years from now.
Right, and so we had a great conversation with him, and we are excited that you will get to listen in on that conversation. We think Brock has a lot of things to offer, a lot of great words to speak into our lives to both challenge us and encourage us.
Brock is also a new youth pastor at Falls Church Anglican, which is right down the road from where we are, just outside the Beltway of Washington, D.C. And it's an interesting new gig for him. He's only been there about a year. But he was gracious enough to welcome us into his office, and we had a great sit-down conversation with him. We found out, actually, that his parents were Christian rock stars who opened for the famous Billy Graham.
That's right. Yes, 70s. Christian rock stars. Nothing gets better than that. So you'll find in our show notes some pretty amazing pictures and maybe even a link to YouTube or so to hear a little bit of Brock's parents' amazing band.
Picture 70s hippies rockers, and that's what they look like. It's awesome. We heard a few clips, and we'll post them, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
So Brock has a lot of theological background, experience, has been all over the church for years, different locations, different types of churches, and just has a wealth of wisdom and insight into what youth ministry really is and its value. And so we're going to share that interview with you right now. We're so glad that we got a chance to sit down with Brock Morgan. Well, we're excited to have Brock Morgan with us today. our first guest interview on Youth Ministry Sherpas. Yes. Welcome, Rock.
Oh, man, it's so good to be with you guys. This is awesome.
Yeah, we're excited about this.
And it's live. Like, this is, like, in person.
This is live in person. We are sitting in the same room, we promise.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Brock is the author of Youth Ministry 2027, A Look into the Future of What Awaits Us. And we think it's a pretty interesting book and gives us a lot to think about. So thanks for sitting down with us today.
Oh, man, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm flattered that anyone at all would read my book. It's insane.
Well, it was a good book, and we actually highly recommend it to anybody that's listening, for sure. Before we get to the book, though, let's just talk a little bit about you. Like, how'd you find your way into student ministry?
Okay, so I was a freshman in college, a PE major, because I wanted to play dodgeball the rest of my life.
Great call.
You picked the right career then.
You know? And I was being, actually the president of our college started meeting with me and some of my buddies once a week. And after a few months of this, the way he talked about life was so different than I'd ever heard. And it started challenging my whole dodgeball career concept. And so one day I just asked him what he saw in me. And he was like, Brock, do you really want to know? Mm. I was like, yeah. What do you think I should do? What do you see in me? And he was like, you should be a youth pastor. Mm. You would be a great youth pastor. And it was like music to my ears. Mm. And I think he may have been levitating while he spoke. I'm not quite sure.
Was there a glow of light
around
him?
There's a glow of light around. I heard the Little Mermaid music. Oh! You know. But the next day, it was in the middle of my freshman year, I was volunteering in a Young Life club.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
That was 27 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's love how long it. We've been doing this, too.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
So, what's that? 27 plus 27 plus 27.
That's a lot of...
Don't ask me to do that math in my head. I can't do that.
I'm really fascinated because your parents were in a Christian rock band.
They were.
You got to tell us
oh
about
Oh, my gosh.
This. This is great.
Yeah. And the I mean, this is the 70s. This is the hippie Christian rock. Now, Christian rock, there was no such thing as Christian rock in the 70s, really. Because Christian music was kind of more folky.
Okay.
There wasn't like heavy. There wasn't heavy music. There was a little bit as the 70s went on, but when they started in particular, they sounded like old Chicago.
Okay. Really?
You know, 25 or 6 to 4 kind of.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Great stuff.
And they were really great. They had a top 10 hit on secular radio.
Really? What was it?
It was called The Gadget Man, and it got up to number 7 on the charts.
What was the band name?
The band was called The Amplified Version. That's actually a poster right there. We are in my office right now.
Oh, yeah. That is very 70s.
Yeah. And so...
we'll put a picture of that in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. But, churches would literally burn their records outside of... because their music was... You listen
it was
to it now, it doesn't sound hard... compared to music today or whatever.
But at that time.
But at that time, and especially that they were singing Christian music. But at the end of their time, Billy Graham just passed away.
Yeah.
He invited them to start being the band at their youth nights. So, you know, he would do these huge crusades, and a couple of nights would be, let's invite all the teenagers.
Yeah, sure.
And to get him there, he would, you know, in the 90s, it was DC Talk or whatever. In the 70s, it was the amplified version.
That is fantastic. And so you were humble while this was going on.
Were you like a roadie groupie with
him? Till I was about 10.
Oh, that's cool. Fantastic.
Yeah, so after they quit the band, we lived with Keith Green. I don't know if you remember Keith Green.
I love Keith Green.
So my dad and him became really good friends, and he was running this Last Day of Ministries in Southern California. And there was a time where we lived there. And my parents are, to this day, my parents are radicals.
That's
like,
awesome.
They are just, like, just lovers of Jesus, and they love teenagers, and they're just rad. They live in Oregon, and they're still kind of hippie.
Oregon's a good place to live.
They are. I know. Yeah. I know. So
of course you were destined to be a youth pastor. Then.
I know.
How could you be anything else?
I tried to fight it. I was kind of pulled into it. And the crazy thing is that the first youth worker that I know of in our family is was my great grandmother. She was the teacher of the teenagers at her church in like the 20s.
Oh wow.
In
oh,
30s goodness. And 40s. She did it forever in her church, and teenagers would fight to sit next to her during wow. church Sunday mornings.
That's a great time.
And she led my grandmother who was 12 to the Lord, and she ended up marrying my grandfather, her son.
Wow.
And so there's this long legacy of loving teenagers.
Not just ministry, but youth ministry.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So.
Huh. How'd you guys end up in D.C.? I
mean, yeah.
In the D.C. area now.
So we, you know, after my parents quit the band, we were in California. We lived in Texas. We lived in Missouri. Then we moved to Alexandria, Virginia, right here outside of D.C. But I was only here for about 8 years as a kid, and then I moved back to the West Coast. So I've been mostly doing ministry on the West Coast. And 2-3 years ago, my wife and I launched a ministry called Generation 514. We put out youth ministry curriculum through the youth cartel called Next, and we run a youth conference called The Amazing Next, and we still do that. Mm-hmm. I'm a youth pastor now in a church also, but when we launched that nonprofit, it was like, where do you want to live? And I was thinking back to Los Angeles, but we made the mistake of praying. You never make the mistake. Or you should not pray if you just want to do what you want to do. We started praying, and God just started opening up doors in D.C. And we came here as a family. And
well, the traffic's a lot less in D.C. than L.A.
Ah, right, right.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, exactly. So we came to D.C., and man, we just love it here. Mm. It's such an amazing place.
It is.
Just 2 days ago, my wife and I drove in. We're just a few miles outside of D.C. to the African American Museum. Have you guys been there yet?
I've not been to that one yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oh my gosh, it's so great. And it's easy to get tickets if you'd mm-hmm. show up at 1 o'clock. People, if you come to D.C., go outside at 1 o'clock and they'll hand you tickets.
Okay.
And you just walk in.
Good to know.
Little tidbit, D.C. tidbit right there.
So you're a youth pastor at an Anglican church now.
Yes.
You've been in all kinds of churches. I want to hear more about that.
I am a theological mutt, man. And
how's that impacted you? What's that like?
Again, we were running this nonprofit, and this Anglican church here in D.C. called the Falls Church called me, and I met with them a few times. I was not interested at all. The Lord really made it clear that we were to come here, and it is a very different liturgy and more traditional worship, not in our youth ministry, but in the main mm-hmm. services. And that is definitely not my thing. I haven't grown up or been a part of churches that are high level liturgical churches, but I'm digging it.
Digging it?
Good. I'm digging it. You know, this church is alive with the Spirit. It's highly intellectual, and it's open to God's Spirit, and it's Christ-centered. I guess they believe in the Trinity here. So it's been actually a refreshing place. The people are amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. What about your family? Tell us about your family.
Yeah.
Married, kids?
Married for in May 23 years.
Awesome.
How long have you guys been married?
I'm celebrating my 30th this year.
30. Yeah. Holy Moses.
Yeah, and I'll hit 23 in June.
Okay. So similar.
95, right?
Yes, 95.
There you
That's
go.
Right. Yeah. I had to think there for a second.
Old man Steve over here.
Old man Steve over there.
So she is a youth worker, and she actually works for the National Network of Youth Ministry.
Oh, cool.
NNYM.
That's
okay.
Awesome.
And she's amazing. She's we have one kid, one biological kid, who's a sophomore at Lee University in Cleveland, Ooh. Tennessee.
My son's looking at Lee.
Dude, it's such a good school.
I've heard good things.
Oh my gosh.
This is great.
It's not like super small. It's like a 6,000 kid mm-hmm. thing. Oh my gosh, it's so great. She's a film student, and her professors are the Pixar movie people and the Mission Impossible people.
Oh wow.
That's so cool.
And she is in heaven.
Loving life.
How does a Christian university get
that's amazing. Yeah.
That's very cool.
It's insane. So she's in heaven.
Belmont down in Nashville.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great school too. Yeah. So she's loving it. We were legal guardians of a girl who is now 22, married, as a kid. Okay. And so yeah, that's our family. Cool. So
you feel like living in DC, you're living in the center of the universe in some ways?
Yeah, DC is such a calm, unified city.
I feel sarcasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
your sense of peace travels up to 270 to Frederick, Maryland.
At our church, you know, we have very prominent, influential, political people. And on both sides.
Yep.
And so we try to be a place where anyone can come and be a part of it. And so, but yeah, living in D.C., I have to tread lightly. There are certain times I'm like, I want to say something, but I don't want to exclude. I mean, for these people who are here, this is their life.
Right.
And I'm not perfect, but I've tried to. Just love them well, support them wherever they're at, but yeah, DC, man, it's a whole other ball game right now.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my gosh!
All right, well, what about the book? The book.
Yes, let's dive into the book.
What? First of all, what motivated you to? Hey, I need to write this book. You know, where'd that come from? Where'd the impetus come from?
I've been wanting to write a different book. I wanted to write a big boy book.
Like, what does that even mean?
I've written four books. I wrote a book for parents. I wrote two books for youth workers and a book for students. And I was like, man, I would love to write like an adult, like general Christian audience kind of like a big boy book. And so I've been trying to play with some ideas, but a guy named Mark Ostreicher, which I'm sure you guys, are familiar Mark. With. Yeah. Marco is amazing. He gave me a call, and he runs the publishing company that I write for. He was like, hey, we want you to write another youth ministry book. And I was like, no, I'm not really interested. Like, I'm working on this other thing. But Marco is this guy. If you don't know him, you got to look him up. He's so brilliant, and he can manipulate me very well, very easily. I really love him. And he was like, dude, we really want you to... We think you have more to say. And but I was like, well, I have zero ideas. I don't know what I would say. I already wrote a youth worker book.
Yeah.
I don't know what more I would say. And he's like, well, let us brainstorm, and we'll come back with five ideas, and we'll see if anything gets you going. So a couple of days later, they come back to me with these ideas. He calls me, and I hate every single... I'm like, I can't write that. Like... I don't even remember what they were. But one of them was in my youth ministry in a post-Christian world book. The last chapter, he said that youth workers tell them all the time that whenever they're discouraged, they read that last chapter and it's like a big hug. It's like a shot of vision and encouragement. And he was like, you know, what if you wrote a whole book like that?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know how hard it was to write one chapter like that?
Now you want 180 pages?
I can't. I don't know if I can do that. So long story short, I just went, okay, give me some time and let me see if I can think of something.
Yeah.
And this is where I came up with this idea for the book. I had a friend who was talking to me. He's a youth pastor in England. And I kind of talk about this in the beginning of this book. There's really like a revival, a movement happening in England right now, really in Europe. Africa. I mean, really, actually, everywhere but North America, even Canada, actually.
Really?
It's crazy what's happening. And so I'm in London, I'm sitting with my friend, who's a youth pastor and kind of this futurist guy who kind of reads culture and sees coming trends. And he goes, Brock, just 10 more years. And I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, just wait 10 more years. There's going to be a revival, a movement like is happening in England, like is happening around the world. It's going to happen in the U.S. Just hang on 10 more years. And I thought, oh my gosh. So that was in my mind, kind of plaguing me like, okay, I've been a youth pastor for 27 years. I can go 37 years. No problem. I can do this. And I've been calling, I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I've been calling for a few years, this generation right now, last couple of years, the Thomas generation. They are quick to, you know, they're living in a pluralistic world. It's very complex, access to everything, and they're quick to doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a really tender heart, mm-hmm. and they just really want to know what's true. And so I've been referring to them as kind of the Thomas generation. And the story of Thomas, Thomas moves from doubt to faith and into a movement.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up traveling to India, to this area called Kerala. And in Kerala, he plants, a revival breaks out, a movement starts. He plants seven churches that are actually still going to this
really?
Day. Mm-hmm. And the area of Kerala is known to this day to be followers of Jesus, like that whole region in India, because of Thomas moving from doubt to faith into a movement. And so I'm thinking through this stuff, and I thought, in 10 years, it's going to be 2027. How can we move a generation from doubt to faith and into a movement like Thomas? And then I was like, wouldn't it be cool if someplace in the Gospels, chapter 20, verse 27, was Thomas moving from doubt to faith? I open up to John 20:27, and I was like, again with the Little Mermaid.
There it was, the moment.
Jesus going, Thomas, believe. Leave your doubt and believe. Look, touch the, you know, my hands. Touch my side.
Yeah.
And at any rate, Youth Ministry 20:27. Then it just immediately, I like had every chapter. I felt like it was a God thing, man.
Yeah.
Like it just boom, and it almost kind of like wrote itself in a way. And I just felt like God was in it. And so I'm really excited to hear youth workers around the country reading it. And
What kind of things are you hearing from them as you get responses?
You know, a lot of encouragement, a lot of challenge. There's some challenging stuff, because I do feel like there's some things we need to maybe make some shifts in our youth ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in England, in the 1950s, C.S. Lewis talked about how they were, at that time, living in a post-Christian world. 1950s. Very different than America in the 1950s. This is him in the UK. Mm-hmm. And the church responded initially to the changing of the cultural landscape in Europe, and in particular, the UK, in a very negative way.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of turned inward. They secluded themselves. They were very judgmental. They thought fire and brimstone would win the culture back.
Mm-hmm.
They
didn't go well.
It didn't go so well. And then legendary people would visit England, let's say, and they would be like, "Wow, the faith is dead.
Mm-hmm.
The churches are empty." But in the 90s, something happened. If you trace back kind of to the movement that's happening there right now. There's this church in London called Holy Trinity Brompton, and they started this class for their people because they realized, wow, our people who come every week are biblically illiterate. They're living in this post-Christian world. They don't really know what the Bible talks about.
Yeah.
What if we had this class for
our
people? And it was the Alpha class.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so they found out that their people started getting saved in this Alpha class.
Yeah, it's a great... You guys run it.
We run
Alpha.
I'm a huge Alpha fan.
Yeah.
And then they noticed that they would run it again, and their members started bringing their friends and their family. And all of a sudden, before they knew it, thousands of people in London started going through Alpha. And then churches started, and it started exploding.
Well, it provides an environment for doubt, which is part
right.
of the process.
And that's what's so powerful about, it's not a let's win them with this sermon or let's, it's a, what do you guys think?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
somehow the conversation leads you to this beautiful faith.
Mm-hmm.
And our greatest skeptics have sat through 8 weeks or 12 weeks, how many weeks you're going to do it. And they go through the Alpha process, which you see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the end, it's rare that you find someone who the faith hasn't dialed in for them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's insane.
We've been running it for 2 years now, and the people that come through there, you know, are just, they may not, quote unquote, cross that finish line of faith.
Sure.
But man, they're just like, okay, this is not what I thought it was.
Exactly.
I want to keep talking about this.
Yeah, let's keep doing it. And I think what's interesting is the United States, some churches are doing it, like your church, our church. But Then they've been sitting around. They see the alpha meeting is you eat some dinner around a table, mm-hmm. you watch a 15-minute thing, and then you just talk about it. Mm-hmm. And they do this for a few weeks. A lot of them get saved. Mm-hmm. And then they go, okay, go to church. And they go to church, and they're like, I miss...
This isn't like the class.
This yeah. isn't like the class at all.
We don't talk here. We just listen.
Yeah, I'm just listening to somebody else talk about the faith.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the faith. I want to get to know people. This is way different. Yeah. And so our structures... that's just, to me, a really interesting little, like, how do we get people who've experienced faith? Like, a lot of times kids will come in youth ministry on our retreats. Mm-hmm. Retreats are the most real place on earth, I'm convinced, the most authentic place. We are sharing our stories with each other. Mm-hmm. We're praying with it. We're opening the scriptures together. We're expressing our doubts. We're mm-hmm. sharing what God is doing in our lives. We're worshiping God without fear of judgment, and we're doing it all in the midst of community. And we go back home and they get caught up into the busyness and the grind of their life. And again, that reality, it's like, how do we bring the reality of this back home, which I believe is just, back home is an illusion. We're living in an illusion. The real thing happens when we finally open our lives up to each other and to God, and we make space for each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we come back to the illusion. And I think that could be the alpha thing too. This all of a sudden, this authentic, real yeah. experience, and we kind of go back into this kind of plain church stuff. Yeah.
When you think about that in the context of student ministry, right? Youth yeah. ministry, would you say there are ways where you think maybe student ministry is ahead of the church in general in providing some of that opportunity? But then at the same time, what are the shifts that need to happen?
No, I do think in a lot of ways student ministry does lead the way. Kids are really living out our cultural values. So whether we know it or not, our culture is really impacting them. It does impact adults, but probably not as, you know, the adolescent journey. They're still in the midst of identity, autonomy, and belonging, those mm-hmm. the three tasks of adolescence. And so the environment is king. The whatever we are living in impacts us, especially if we don't know who we are, if our choices matter, if we have any power, if you know. And so those questions of identity, autonomy, and belonging, where do I fit? We don't know that. Mm-hmm. Then the culture is going to have a huge say. And so youth workers today are dealing with, I mean, how many kids are we dealing with today who are struggling with massive sexual confusion, extreme amounts of anxiety, mm-hmm. addictions, mm-hmm. all kinds of addictions. Mm-hmm. And so youth workers are forced to deal with real world culture stuff. Whereas adult ministry may not, I mean, adults kind of come in and we're really good at faking it.
Right.
You know, but kids are dying, you know, they're wanting help. And so as soon as they sense that they're safe with us, they're wide open. And so a lot of times mm-hmm. the things that we are doing are on the cutting edge because we're working with a group of people who are living out what is actually happening in time in culture. And so I think that's why student ministry stuff is kind of on the front lines.
Well, that wraps up part one of our interview with Brock Morgan. The good news is there's a part two, so there's still more to come.
Yeah, we're only halfway done. Good stuff, and you'll hear that in the next episode. A couple really good ideas that we want to chat about for just a minute that come out of the first part. This idea of this generation being the Thomas generation, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This idea of our kids being filled with doubt, and that I think culturally we see that, and it can be frustrating and it can be difficult because sometimes that doubt comes across as non-interest or non-commitment, mm-hmm. but yet for him to unpack this idea of doubt moving to faith, moving to a movement was right. encouraging, actually.
Right, yeah. I heard it said one time that doubt is not the opposite of faith, it's the on-ramp to faith. And I think that's true. And I think if we're open to that as youth workers, as we deal with the kids of today and let them express their doubts and work through it with them and not freak out about it, it's going to go a long way towards helping them move towards Christ.
Yeah, so challenge big time today to think, how are we creating those environments in our student ministries where that doubt is not frowned upon, we're not scared of it. It's welcome, it's open, it's a place where they can express that doubt, because then that will help them make that on-ramp into faith.
To really be able to partner with kids and help them find Jesus in the midst of the real world.
Right. So we like to just encourage you to take some time to think about what are the environments that you're creating in your student ministry, mm-hmm. and are those environments conducive to a generation of kids who are right now filled with just a lot of doubt, have a lot of questions, and maybe to rethink some of what you're doing to make sure that there is a place for that doubt in your student ministry. I know I was challenged by that.
Yeah. So as we prepare for episode 9, second part of the interview, I'm going to be looking to talk about some things like anxiety, the movement, transcendence, the Holy Spirit. Pearl Jam comes up. It's got to be a good episode.
It's great. Pearl Jam, right? Comes up for sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Tons more wisdom from Brock to come in episode 9. So be sure you tune in. You do not want to miss the end of this great conversation.
So thanks for being with us today. We're glad you joined us for Youth Ministry Sherpas, helping youth workers to keep going. And we will see you back here next time.
Episode number 9.